Hello and welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and I am just so glad to be with you for another episode with another extraordinary mom. If you're joining us for the first time, each week I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons that they've learned along the way. It has been so fun to get to hear from such a broad spectrum of moms and to learn that no two extraordinary moms look the same. As always, if you want more information about the show, you can go to the extraordinarymomspodcast.com page. You can look up our episodes, past guests, more information, pictures. It's a great resource. If you haven't already done so, head over to iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast there. And if you wouldn't mind, leave a rating and review. That way more people can find out about the podcast. I'm so excited for today's episode. Today I'm going to talk with Peggy Nosty, who's the founder of the Blue Dot Project. This is a project revolving around women's mental health. It's kind of a taboo topic, and there's a lot of shame revolving around postpartum mental health. And for some reason, if you're going through the baby blues or postpartum depression or anxiety or something more severe than that, a lot of times it's a really isolating feeling. You may not be telling people. You may not know that you have that. You may not know what to do for help. Suffering from postpartum mental health issues is not uncommon, but for some reason, it's extremely taboo to talk about it. So Peggy's going to talk with us very vulnerably about her own experience with postpartum anxiety, talk more about the Blue Dot Project, and she's going to give some words of wisdom for people that may be struggling with this as well. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Peggy. All right, I am so excited to be talking with Peggy Nosty today. Hi, Peggy.
Good morning.
How are you? Well, it's afternoon for me. I wish it was still morning.
That's right.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Peggy and I know each other from preschool, and her youngest and my oldest, Parker, and her son Theo are the same age. And I got to know Peggy and a little bit of her backstory as we became friends through that. And so I can't wait for you to hear about her motherhood journey and a topic that she is really, really passionate about. So, Peggy, why don't you give a little background as to who you are for our listeners, and then we'll get chatting about the important topic of mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Peggy O'Neill Nosty. I grew up in El Centro, which is in the Imperial Valley here in California. It's a little farm town. I am one of three children. I'm the middle child. And I went to University of San Diego for my undergraduate. I'm a teacher by training, and I have a master's in education technology, which was obsolete the minute I received it because technology has changed so much.
Yeah.
I taught for about 12 years. I taught teachers, and I taught fifth grade. And then when my daughter Ella was born, I decided to stay home. So I have Ella, who's 10, I have Charlie, who's 7, and Theo is 5, and I'm happily married for almost 14 years, and I think that about sums me up.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you taught children, you taught adults. Which did you prefer?
You know, when I was young, I loved teaching fifth grade. Mm-hmm. That was fantastic. But now that I have kids at home, as I'm considering going back to work as they're getting older, I am looking more toward teaching adults just to have that shift in mentality a little bit.
100%. And you're still affecting children when you teach teachers how to be excellent teachers.
Exponentially.
Uh-huh. So while you may spend a lot of your time already with children, it might be nice to have a little change of scenery.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
That's the best. That's great. So tell me about your early days of motherhood, Peggy.
Oh, my early days of motherhood were fantastic. You know, I quit working, so I was, you know, retired, and I had the best baby. She was so easy and fun, and my sister had a baby a month before I did, so we mothered together a lot.
That's fun. That's like the dream.
It was so fun, and it was wonderful. It was everything I had hoped it was going to be, and a lot more. And I was so glad that we had done it, and yeah, it was just fantastic.
That's
just
awesome.
fantastic.
That's great. And so you had Ella, and then how soon after did you have Charlie?
Charlie came 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was old enough to help, and, you know, having another child just sort of added to the mix in a significant way, but it was still manageable. You know, my husband and I could each take one. We weren't outnumbered quite yet. As you know, the third.
Yes.
You're outnumbered.
Yeah, for sure. And then Theo came as the caboose.
And then Theo came along 2 years to the day after his brother, Charlie.
They really share a birthday?
They share the same due date.
Okay, wow.
But, Theo arrived on his due date and then has not followed a single direction since. That's Theo. He's got a mind of his own.
Gotta love those kids who just, they know what they want. When they want it, and there's no convincing them otherwise.
That's Theo.
Yeah, so after you had Theo, your experience with the babyhood was a little bit different. Tell me about that.
You know, so both of my boys were very colicky. Mm-hmm. They were hard to console. They would arch their back when you wanted to be hugging them and holding them to console them. They would arch their back because they were so uncomfortable with whatever reflux they were dealing with. And so they screamed a lot. They mm-hmm. cried a lot. And with Charlie, we got, you know, we just sort of adapted to him. And once we figured out how to make him happy and comfortable and get him enough food and the right food and sleep, he was good.
Yeah.
And then we dealt with the same thing with Theo. You know, when he first was born, he was like furniture. You know, the first 6 weeks are so wonderful. You just lay him down and everything's fine. You get on with, you know, the other kids.
Yeah.
And then he continued to be very fussy. Really, just anywhere we went, there was so much spit up and so much crying. I mean, I'd have it down my back, down my front. You know, we couldn't really go anywhere.
Yes.
There's a booth at our favorite sushi restaurant that I still look at and think, they have no idea how much spit up is in the crack of that booth. It's just, I couldn't get it out. I couldn't reach it.
Oh my gosh. So, and we've all been there where we bring a change of clothes for the baby, but you forget about bringing a change of clothes for yourself. And you're out in public and you're like, what do I even do? I've changed my baby, but look at me. I'm a mess. We've all been there.
Don't look at me.
Yes, for sure.
So... it became kind of a joke, but not a funny joke, but my husband, you know, I would just go to sit down and he'd cry and my husband would laugh, you know, cause it was to him, it was funny, but to me it was starting to get like, okay, this is not so funny anymore.
Yeah.
And there are other two kids too. So there was no rest. It was a constant something going on. And luckily we were going into the summertime, so we were outside a lot. And, you know, everything was just sort of chaos, but we were doing okay. You know, it was just, you expect to have that a little bit.
Right. But you're never quite sure what is kind of typical, like, adjustment period and just adapting to a new normal. Like you said, like a third kid, you're outnumbered. So there's a lot of factors. But then it kind of starts to hit you that maybe it's not so normal and maybe it's something else beyond just the typical adjustment phase. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, and I think, I knew with Charlie what this reflux was and why he was so upset. It's hard to assess in a rational way what the situation is and what would be best, pragmatically speaking.
Right, absolutely.
Instead of emotionally.
Absolutely. So when did it get to the point where you really realized something is definitely wrong, not just with dealing with the colic and dealing with Theo, but for yourself personally?
Yeah, so we rented a beach house in Coronado, which is, if you're not familiar with San Diego, it's this great little area in San Diego, and we were planning to baptize Theo that week up at USD, my alma mater, and we had a ton of family and friends coming into town, and it was supposed to be just an epic week of family and friends, mm-hmm. and a beautiful place, and I should have been completely blissful. I had everything that I ever wanted, a healthy family, lots of family and friends who I love, all surrounding me. And I was not having a good time. And it was, looking back on it, just, I'm still in disbelief that this happened, but I just couldn't, I wasn't sleeping is really what it boils down to. I would go to lie down and, you know, my husband would say, you know, I'll take the kids to the beach. We'll, you know, everybody will get out of the house. We'll just, you just go take a nap. And I would try to take a nap and I wouldn't sleep. And, I just remember thinking, well, this is not right. Like it's all right here. Just close your eyes and go to sleep. And I couldn't do it. And then one of my oldest and dearest friends came in. She was the godmother to Theo. And she came in and she's a doctor. And I only say that because I really respect her opinion when it comes to all things like this. And she came in and saw me and turned around and left and came back about 15 minutes later with a can of formula and a bottle of wine.
This is
and
my prescription
said,
for
baby,
you. Yeah.
Feed this baby, and we are going to sit and feed this baby formula and have a glass of wine. And that picture, we even took a picture of the baby bottle and the glass of wine, and that should have been the end of the story, right? I should have been like, oh, okay.
Right.
So we're just going to enjoy ourselves, and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
We get home, and I am still just like wound up tight as a knot. And, you know, everybody's gone home and we're back home and I should be able to relax and I'm not relaxing. So I'm by myself. My oldest is about to start kindergarten and I'm just like beside myself. And the best way I can describe it is, you know, when you're driving and something, and you know this, you're driving and something like comes out in front of you and you have to slam on the brakes.
Yes.
You know that feeling?
Yep.
I know you know that
feeling. And you know it's coming, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so you're just like, you're braced. That's how I felt constantly. Constantly, for no reason.
So, and can I ask, did you ever feel like that before? Like, are you a tightly wound person?
No,
okay.
I am chill.
Yeah.
I have the gift of inner peace. Like, I've always, and I've dealt with some stuff in my life. Like, my dad died when I was 30, which is way too young, I think, to lose your dad.
Right.
You know, I've had my share of grief and hard times, but I've always been able to get through it with, you know, inner peace and faith and just knowing that things were going to be okay.
So you this know, is I, a stark contrast for you. Like you
this
knew
is,
this is
this
not
is
you.
Like not me.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting on the stairs one day as my husband was going to work and I had all three kids sitting near me or on me or around me. And I remember my husband looking at me and I thought, I know he thinks I'm crazy. And I was like, can't do this. I can't, I don't know why, but all of a sudden I can't do this.
Yeah. And you previously loved being a mom. You felt like you had your act together, but something was different.
Yeah. So we would do this where my husband would come home at night and he'd say, go to bed. I'll take the kids, go to bed. And I tried, couldn't, but it wasn't working. I would go upstairs and lie down and I would hear a baby crying and I'd come downstairs to see if Theo was crying and he wasn't. But I couldn't, not that I was hearing voices, but do you know when you go to bed and you think,
yeah,
oh, that's someone's crying. Oh no,
yeah, right.
Nobody's crying.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was not in any shape to be mothering by myself.
Yeah. So were you telling anybody that you felt this desperate and this out of control?
No, because I didn't want to talk to anybody.
Why?
I think my sister knew.
Okay.
But we decided she shouldn't come because she had two young boys and they don't sleep through the night.
Yeah.
And so she didn't want to disrupt anything that was already going on.
Yeah.
And my mom was still in Minnesota. But I wasn't really reaching out to friends.
Yeah.
I had sort of self-isolated by that time. Not intentionally, but you just don't feel good. And so you just don't, it doesn't occur to you to want to, you know, get together with friends.
And when you're in the middle of this, you don't necessarily know what you need. You just know that this is not working.
But that's exactly spot on. Yeah.
Well, because you don't know if somebody bringing a meal would really help you. Like, all you know is you're sitting on the stairs with kids climbing all over you, and you just feel out of your mind, like, this is not normal. Like, why am I not so happy that I have three healthy kids around me? Yeah. Like, this should be everything to me. And so you're feeling maybe a little guilty that you're not feeling the bliss that you should feel. Maybe you're feeling like you don't know what you can ask for that would actually make these things better. Aside
that's
from,
it,
like,
exactly.
Not having these kids. And that's not what you want either. So if you don't know what to ask for, how can you ask for help?
That's the thing. I didn't know what I needed. I didn't know if I said, please take my kids for the day, I didn't want that. I didn't want someone else taking care of my kids. I wanted my kids.
Yes.
And I didn't want dinner. And I needed to have this feeling unlocked. I needed to get better.
Yes.
And so I went to a marriage and family therapist. I made an appointment. I went and saw him. And sweet old guy. He didn't have any idea about maternal mental health.
Yeah, okay.
Trust me.
Yeah.
He'd never been to a class on it. So I went home and I called my OBGYN, who I love and respect, and her opinion, you know, is what I trusted. So she says, okay, well, I decided to medicate. Okay. And that was a really hard decision for me because I don't take anything stronger than Tylenol. Mm-hmm. And I had heard stories about medication and I didn't want to have any side effects and I didn't want to have to deal with getting off of them. And I thought that was the last resort and I was there. So, okay, yeah. Phew, I'm gonna medicate.
And you were gonna medicate for depression or
no
or
for
what?
The anxiety.
For
I didn't
anxiety.
Have depression.
Okay.
It was just anxiety.
Okay.
Just that brace for impact feeling.
Okay.
So my OBGYN calls me in a prescription for something called Lexapro, and it was 10 milligrams. And I took it. And I thought, thank God, as soon as it kicks in, I'm gonna feel great.
Yeah.
Well, I took the next dose, and I all of a sudden couldn't see. Everything was blurry.
Oh, my goodness.
My pupils had dilated, and I couldn't see anything. And so, of course, I'm like, well, this is just a side effect I'm going to have to deal with. But by the end of that day, I was like, I can't function like this.
Right.
We had two great babysitters who were helping out at this point. They had to drive me around.
Wow.
And my daughter had started kindergarten now. So I'm supposed to be like, you know, totally engaged. This is the beginning of elementary school. And I had a babysitter driving me around because I couldn't see.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I called the OBGYN and she said, stop taking it immediately. Well, I should have known that, but obviously not in my right mind.
Right.
And just determined to get better. I didn't think that that was what I was supposed to do because this medicine to me is like, you know, once you start, you don't stop kind of thing.
Yeah.
So she says, stop taking it. And so then I didn't know what to do. Like, okay, if that medicine's not working, what's going on? So I get the name of a doula who is located here in San Diego, and she gives me the name of a reproductive psychiatrist.
Hmm.
Did you know there's such a thing?
I did not.
Me neither. But I was so relieved to hear that there was somebody who had studied this enough to maybe help me.
Right.
So my mom finally gets back from Minnesota and she's there. And my dear friend Leanne comes over to help my mom watch the kids. And Leanne walks in and she just is like, oh my gosh, you look awful.
Just what you want to hear, right? Postpartum.
Thanks. She said, you are so pale. And I had lost like 10 pounds on top of going back to my regular weight. I had lost 10 pounds on top of that. And I mean, that's not healthy.
Yeah.
I was eating, but I was burning through calories from the anxiety.
Wow.
It's just crazy.
Wow.
And my clothes were hanging off of me. It's not a problem you should have after having a baby, right?
Right.
Just weight on you. And anyway, so my mom and Leanne watched the kids, and I went and saw this reproductive psychiatrist. And it felt weird to be out in the world by myself.
Yeah.
It seemed like everybody else was going about their business, and how had the world kept going? And oh my, felt very strange.
Yeah.
Anyway, she said, we're going to get you well. And I'll never forget those words, because I just sort of felt like, I really think this is finally going to happen for me. Like, and this really, from the time Coronado was the second week in August, and this was the end of August. So not a lot of time had gone by, like 3 weeks.
Yeah. But you're just, you're hanging on for dear life for every minute of every day, it sounds like.
Yeah. Felt like 3 years.
Yeah. Wow.
So she finally got me the medication. I needed like a micro dose of medication. Anyway, the medicine doesn't kick in right away.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that.
Oof.
That's important for moms to know, I think, because here I thought, I'm going to pop this pill and by tomorrow I'm going to be feeling like myself. And that was, so that was the end of August that I started the medication, and it was October 7th. You know, every day my husband would say, how do you feel? And I'd always give him the canned answer, like, I'm doing good. You know, I'm doing better. I'm doing okay. And on October 7th, when he asked me, I started to answer and I thought, oh my gosh, I actually am telling the truth today. Yeah. Like, I feel good. October 7th.
You'll never forget.
No, never.
Wow. Never. That's a long time to make it through, where you're just waiting with bated breath. Like, you need to feel like yourself again.
Yeah. My kids needed me.
Yeah.
I needed me. My husband needed me. And I, yeah, still can't believe it happened.
Wow. Wow. And so after the medicine kicked in, how did you move forward? So you were feeling like yourself again. How did you get your life back, kind of? And did you do anything differently than you had been doing previously, now that you've been through this experience?
You know, you sort of have a new lease on life. You have an appreciation for just the little things. You know, I held my babies all the time. And then I went back to taking care of myself more too. I went back to yoga, and I made sure that I was getting the proper nutrition and sleep that I needed. And I, you know, I asked for help a lot. Mm-hmm. I owe my mom and sister like tenfold. Seriously. They were amazing. And, you know, I took it easy. I did take it easy. And eventually, like 6 months after the medication, I wanted to get off the medication so fast. And the reproductive psychiatrist, she had her reasons for wanting to keep me on for at least 6 months.
Yeah.
And she did. And then it was a little scary to get off of them and, you know, kind of take the training wheels off, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it was easy to get off of the meds.
Well, that's really fortunate. Not everyone has that experience. Depending upon your dosage and what type, like, it can be hard getting on, it can be hard getting off, and it just is very individual, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So, since getting off the medicine and since that time in your life, have you had any residual issue, mental health type issues?
Well, I'm always a little crazy, but you are too. You have three children, right?
Yeah. When you become a mom, you kind of sign up for that to some degree, but not to the point where we should be concerned, right, Peggy?
Right. No, thankfully I've been healthy. I think the only residual from it is I'm a little bit weird about my sleep now. Like, mm-hmm. I will get nervous if we're traveling and I didn't sleep well the first night. I sort of map out my day to make sure that I'm going to get some sleep at some point, because if I don't sleep, then I get a little bit nervous about it, even though with every passing year that's gone by now, you know, Theo's 5 now, so it's been 5 years, and I'm pretty okay with sleep, but I do need my sleep.
Right.
It's important.
It's so good to be self-aware as to the things that really need to be a priority to you, and you need to honor your body and yourself in that, because when you are depriving yourself of those things, you are not your best self for yourself, your husband, your kids. You have to protect those things that you know make a difference, whether it's food, sleep, if you need to be medicated, you know, things like that. exercise.
And to not make an apology to anybody for it. Like, my husband only needs 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night.
Yeah.
And I used to let him make me feel like I was weird about needing 8 hours. And now I don't apologize for going to bed at 10 or 9:30.
Yeah.
You know, I don't apologize for it. It's who I am and I need it. And that's okay. You're right. You've got to make sure that you put your own oxygen mask on first, as they say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great metaphor for sure.
Yeah.
So this time in your life really affected you. I'm glad that you're healthy now, but it really brought this issue to light for you, and you ended up founding an organization to spread awareness for maternal mental health. Tell me about the Blue Dot Project.
Oh, the Blue Dot Project. Well, when I was sick, I was still having to go out into the world, you know, the preschool and the elementary school. And I was very open about what I was going through. I wasn't embarrassed by it. And talking to other moms, 9 times out of 10, the conversation would lead to somebody saying to me, oh, I went through that.
Yep.
Or, oh, my best friend is dealing with that right now. Or somebody had a connection to it. Right. And it would always make me feel better to hear that other people had been through it.
Yes.
And that they looked normal, they were healthy, and that I would get through it too. Mm-hmm. But I was annoyed that they would say it to me in a whisper, like it was this scandalous thing that they were medicated. And there was a stigma that I didn't think needed to be there.
Yeah.
I wasn't embarrassed, and I didn't think they needed to be embarrassed. And we all needed to be open about this because it's a chemical reaction in the brain. That's not my fault.
Yep.
And I think that women need the support of other, we need to support each other. So in wanting to let women know they're not alone, I decided to start a campaign to develop a universal symbol for maternal mental health.
Hmm.
In the same way that the pink ribbon shows support for breast cancer or the red ribbon for HIV/AIDS, there was no symbol for maternal mental health. So I took the idea to my reproductive psychiatrist, and she thought the idea was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought in a third person to write a grant proposal, and we got the grant.
Hmm.
And it's been 2.5 years since we got the grant, and it's been incredible. You know, I have to say that if there had been any roadblocks along the way, I would have scrapped this a long time ago because I'm not that kind of a person who, you know, tries to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
Yeah.
The name's Peg. But
yeah. And your symbol is a round dot. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There you go. No pun intended.
Yes.
So there was a niche. There was a need. There is a groundswell of support for this that I never anticipated. You know, we got the grant in 2012. We were launched with a website, thebluedotproject.org, in 2013. And I was raised by parents who taught me to give back. You never did anything without making sure that you were giving back. And so we made sure that in selling these blue dots, we were going to grant the money out to people who are providing services to moms in low-income areas. So within a year of launching the campaign, we had enough funds to put out the word that we were ready to give people some money that we had raised. And so we've given out a few grants to organizations. They're both on the East Coast.
Mm.
One's in Virginia and one's in DC.
Awesome.
And they have some of our proceeds so that they can help low-income women, because there is a stigma definitely in some cultures that maternal mental health is unacceptable. And so there's a lot of work being done to help those women.
Yeah, that is so amazing. So the blue dot is a like a bumper sticker or a sticker?
Yeah, it's a sticker or a magnet. Mm-hmm. Depending on what you want. And we sell them on the website for $10.
Uh-huh.
And we also give it away, meaning that you can download the image from our website to your blog or your website or your letterhead or whatever, however you want to use it. We don't hold proprietary rights to it. That's, we have a trademarked, but we don't have any, we don't keep it for ourselves.
You just really want to get the word out there and spread that message to as many people as possible. Like, if you see that blue dot, there's a camaraderie there automatically. Like, I get what you're going through, or you get what I'm going through.
Right, you're not alone.
Yes. Why do you think there is that feeling of isolation that comes from maternal mental health issues? And, I mean, there's so many different things. I mean, now that I'm a mom, I and my friends are moms, I have heard so many different versions of this same story that you're talking about. Postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, postpartum bipolar, postpartum, I mean, this
psychosis. Yes.
Then there's baby blues that can really affect people deeply, even though it's not to the severity of perhaps needing medication or going to that next step, acknowledging that your hormones are just so all over the place after you have a baby and you're adapting this new normal, lack of sleep. There are so many factors at play that just, it really affects who you are and how you function. And so this is really personal to me. I had a friend almost exactly 1 year ago that committed suicide.
No.
Yeah. She dealt with, she had never had any mental health issues prior. She had a baby. When her baby turned 3 months, she started developing the depression and turned into bipolar. And she had was in therapy and inpatient therapy, and she was getting help. She was getting help. And she had a lot of support from family. And it was just too much. It was just too much. And it is just heartbreaking to know that her kids are left behind. But she felt so conflicted, and it was just such an inner turmoil for her. It just, you can't understand what somebody's going through until you've been put in their shoes. But now that I'm seeing the repercussions of just how this disease can just really ravage you, and how you have to be willing to be honest with yourself and get the support. And she did. But I mean, we all need to do what is in our own best interest to ask other people for help, get professional help. You just have to go those lengths because your kids need you. Your kids need you, and they need the best version of you that you possibly can muster. And it's not always easy, but you just need to do whatever it is you need to do to get that help.
Oh, I know. That's so terrible.
I know. It is so sad. But I feel like even though that this tragedy occurred, it really got my friends and I talking about it. It really brought this issue to the surface for a lot of people who may not have acknowledged it before. And so I think positive things can come out of tragedies. And so if nothing else, it has really raised this awareness in myself and in my friends and in her friends, to realize this is something we need to take seriously. And I'm sure there's a lot of listeners listening who may not have experienced it to that severity, obviously, but who can identify with those feelings of, oh, like of an identity crisis, and just the struggle is real. The struggle is real.
It's so true. And I think that the medical profession, there's a movement of training the medical community properly. Yeah. Yeah. Because for you and I to be surprised that there's such a thing as a reproductive psychiatrist means that there's not enough people being trained to take care of these moms when they need to. The OBGYN's job sort of stops after your baby is born. You know, they see you at the 6-week checkup, and then that's sort of it. They give you that little survey about how you're doing, but they don't dig much deeper than that. And I think that there are a lot of people doing some really important work to get policy pushed through in the Senate right now. There's a bill that is up for a vote sometime this summer. They're not sure when it's going up for a vote, but it's Bill 3235, and it's supposed to allocate more money to the states to train professionals properly. Wow. So that they can be available to these women when they don't know how to ask for help, and they don't even know what the help is, but they can call somebody.
Yes, that is so vital. Let's say there's someone listening who is not feeling like themselves. They're postpartum, regardless of how far out you are from having your baby, because this doesn't just happen in the weeks directly after having your baby. This can appear months and even a year after delivery. So let's say you're not feeling like yourself. You should be feeling joy from your surroundings, and you're not. You're just maybe depressed, maybe anxious, like you feel like you're always bracing for impact. What should they do? What should they do?
If you go to the bluedotproject.org, we have a resources page, and from there you should be able to find something in your general area. It will link to a national website that could then lead you to your local help. But like I said, there is not a specific job. There's not a person who has a specific job that you can call and say, like, you just call your local mental maternal health person. There's not that. But there are therapists in your area or psychiatrists or doctors who can point you in the right direction, who can sit with you and listen to you and help with your medication plan if that's the route you want to take. But you have to make that call. You have to ask for the help. Even if you don't know what it is you're asking for, reach out, and the right people will pull you in and get you on the way to wellness.
Well, I think there's so many resources out there that can boost you as a mom, because, I mean, motherhood in general, regardless of whether you are dealing with mental health issues, I mean, motherhood is just hard. It is tiring. It's draining. Not all parts are fun. And so it's easy to feel like at the end of every day, but it should not be miserable.
Right.
It should not feel like an out-of-body experience. You should be able to laugh. You should be able to have joy during the day.
Absolutely.
If you're not, that is a red flag.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your fault.
Yes.
If you're not feeling those things, it's not because you've done something wrong.
Yep.
There's something maybe wrong going on in your brain, but it's not because you're to blame.
Yes.
That's a really important thing to remember for all of us who are living in a society where we see so many images of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
They're just still shots, you know. We don't see the rest of what other people's lives are like, and nobody's life is perfect. And it's important to keep that in perspective when you're mothering.
Yes.
That you just do the best for you and your kids.
Yes, absolutely. It's so easy to compare yourself, and like you said, somebody else may look like they have it together. And then when you started telling people, like, oh, I'm dealing with this, they said, oh, me too. But that you may not have guessed, you know? And so I think we try and keep this facade that we have it all together and we can do it all. But there is absolutely no shame in reaching out for help and realizing, A, I can't do it all at the same time. It's just unrealistic to juggle every ball that you want to at the same exact time, you know? You have to pick your priorities, and especially when you have babies, picking your priorities, realize what is the most important things for me to tend to today and what can just go by the wayside for right now, because you can't do it all or else you're going to end up burning out.
Right, right. I always tell new moms, you have to temporarily lower your standards.
Yeah. Yep.
And then you will enjoy things so much more.
Absolutely. I really figured that out with baby number three. It's like, as soon as I didn't, you know, shoot for the moon every single day, but I just focused on what was most important, I had a great day every day. And I felt like I accomplished things every day because I was doing what I felt like I really needed to be doing. And anything else was icing on the cake. And then I could brag about myself. You're like, hey, look, I made dinner for somebody else. Wow, I could just double my recipe.
That's huge.
Amazing. Yeah. We should be able to feel good about what we accomplished during the day. So wherever you need to adjust your standards, maybe that can help you to feel more accomplished just by, letting that fluctuate a little bit. That is so huge. And I think being vulnerable with one another, as soon as you open up to somebody else, Isn't it amazing how suddenly their walls come down and then they can share with you and both of you feel edified by that? We need to be more honest. We need to be more honest about where we're at because it can really help each other mutually.
That's so true.
Are there any other things that you want new mothers to know or people that have dealt with or are dealing with mental illness? Is there anything that else that we should know or tips that you have for getting through that?
I'm no expert, honestly. I would say keep your social network up. Hmm. Make sure that you surround yourself with strong women who make your life better. And yeah, I wish I had some gem, but I don't. I'm here just to make sure that women know they're not alone when they're suffering and to reach out for help is most important, and to make sure that we all know that they will get better.
Yeah.
It will get better.
There is hope. You just have to believe that there is hope. And if nothing else, believe in somebody else who's gone through it and come out the other side and use them as proof that there is hope. Because when you're in the middle of it, it can be so easy to just flounder and feel like you're the exception and it's not going to get better for you. But I think also talking to somebody that you trust, be it a medical professional or a friend or your spouse, who you can say, do you notice something different about me? Are you noticing anything? Like, do I seem like myself? Because sometimes when you're in the midst of it, you are not thinking clearly. You're not seeing yourself accurately. So getting somebody else's perception of you and having them speak to, you do not look good, Peggy. Like, you've lost all this weight. You're not smiling. Yeah. You're gaunt. It took somebody else looking at you to have you really realize, whoa, like, this isn't just me feeling kind of icky. This is serious. So listening to the people around you who know you well and trusting them.
You brought up a really good point. I do want to mention this. There's the May campaign. So May is Maternal Mental Health Month.
Okay.
And the first week of May, there's the May campaign, and it's the National Coalition of Maternal Mental Health. So it's basically a number of organizations who've collaborated to put together an advocacy toolkit. And every year they do this May campaign. And this year the campaign is called Ask Her. Mm. And each day of the week of this week, there will be a different question that you should ask. Like, how are you sleeping? How are you eating? How are you feeling? Mm. If you go to mmhcoalition.com, you can find their May campaign information there, and you can share it on your social media, and you can even sign up to, if you are part of an organization, you can sign up to be part of the May campaign, and there's a lot more information on their website for that. So I think doing our part in promoting it through the media.
Yeah.
And thank you, Jessica, for letting me talk about it, because this is a great way to share what we do with a lot of moms.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important part of making the Blue Dot ubiquitous.
Yeah.
It's just one, it's really, you know, the Blue Dot Project is really just me. it's been quite a road, but I think there are a lot of people who have started to take it on as their own, which is very exciting.
I'm
to see it out in the wild on its own is pretty exciting.
It's like having another baby.
I know it is. It is.
That is, I'm so proud of you, Peggy. I mean, I feel like we all have our own challenges that we face in life, and it's what we do with those challenges after we've come out that other side. And I know that you would not have chosen this probably to be your lot in life, to have to go through that. Like, that was a really painful time for you. But look at what you've done with it. And you're really helping a lot of people. And I think we can all do that in our own sphere. What have you been dealt? What have you learned? And what can you add to the conversation in helping other people? Otherwise, it's a wasted trial.
Your mom is so proud of you. She's so proud of you.
My mom, Mrs. Lieber, was Theo and Parker's preschool teacher. So,
she was the first woman to love my children in a school setting. And she was just a blessing to have for all three of my kids. They love Mrs. Lieber. And they always think of her fondly. And an extraordinary mom is only extraordinary because of their mom. And it's your mom is extraordinary.
I know. I keep wanting to have her on the show, and she keeps saying, well, I don't have anything to add, which is not true.
She should totally be on it. But you're extraordinary, and thanks in part to your mom, because she's just fantastic.
I totally agree. Thank you. She'll be so happy to have a shout out on here. Look at her, Mrs. Lieber. Oh, Peggy, I love your story. I love your message, your vulnerability. It is going to reach and touch so many people and maybe get a lot of people to think about the situation they're in right this second and think, that sounds a lot like me. And they may have some place to go now with that, or they may ask themselves some of these questions. They may know somebody who is feeling this way, and it may trigger that. That's huge. You're doing your job when it can spark that type of conversation.
Yes.
So that's just awesome. So thanks, Peggy. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
So I always end on a little bit of a lighter note. Are there any things that you, Peggy, as the mom and woman, anything that you're enjoying these days? Have you read any good books lately? Recipes you're making? Things that you're just loving? Anything?
Well, I love my Trader Joe's cookbook. I can't live without that, but I have it pretty much memorized.
Wow. I don't know.
Do you have Trader Joe's out there?
I do, but I didn't know they had a cookbook.
Well, they don't put it out themselves.
Okay.
It's a different, you can find it on Amazon Prime or I think Barnes & Noble probably carries it.
What's your favorite meal from them, from that cookbook?
Probably the turkey meatloaf.
Okay. That sounds delicious. That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
I love Five Mary's Farms. It's a blog, and it's a friend of mine I grew up with. He and his wife left Silicon Valley for a life out on the ranch in Northern California, and they're cattle ranchers now. So I order my meat from them. We don't eat a whole lot of meat, but when we do, we like it to be really good. So this is Five Mary's Farms. And her blog is a hoot. She's got four girls, and they all work on the ranch. And it's really inspiring for, a person like me who can barely get a garden planted. But
she sounds like an extraordinary mom. I might have to have her on.
Yes, absolutely. If you can get her on, she's got an interesting story for sure.
How interesting. That is great. Well, I always ask my guests one final question, and this is it. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Well, I was just looking through old photos in the last few weeks, and I have thousands, and I love photos, and I love taking pictures.
Yeah.
But I realized I'm in about 2% of them.
Yeah.
And so the kids may look back on the photos and think, wow, Dad was really fun, you know? I know they'll know that I was behind the camera, but I think that I wish I had forced myself to be in more photos, either by asking a stranger to take the picture of us at the zoo or by reminding my husband gently to take more pictures of me with the kids. I think I wish that I had been better about that. And from here on, I'm going to be better about that. That, and enjoy using the restroom without an audience, because it's going to be a long time before that happens again.
Why is it that every time we go to Target, it's like the second we walk in the door, they're like, we have to go to the bathroom. Why? 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 I tell you, every time I say, let's go potty before we leave the house, but without fail, public restrooms. Ugh.
Oh, I know. And they touch everything.
They do. They do. I love these universal truths. Everyone's like, yep, been there. Been there, done that. Peggy, I think you're extraordinary. I really do. I love the message that you're sharing in terms of mental health. But I also just think you're an extraordinary mom in general to your kids. And I love that you're always seeking to be the very best mom you can be to your children. I think that's all we can do.
That's so true. Feel the same about you. You're a good mom.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, thank you for being on the show today. And I'm going to put links to everything that we talked about in the show notes on the ExtraordinaryMomsPodcast.com page. And the Extraordinary Moms Podcast is going to devote all of May to maternal mental health. So every episode in May is going to be revolving around that conversation. So I'm excited to spread the word, and I'm excited that you kicked it off. And definitely people should check out the May campaign that kicks off next week. Well, I hope you have a great day and have a really fun spring break with your kids.
Thank you. You too.
Yay. All right. I will talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
I want to thank Peggy for being so vulnerable with sharing her story. So many women face the same type of situation postpartum, whether it's depression, anxiety, bipolar, psychosis. I mean, there's just such varying degrees of struggle that can happen when your hormones are totally out of whack after pregnancy. I just really hope that through Peggy's story and through talking about the symptoms and the help that's available, that if you're listening and you're feeling that way, even if you think you might be feeling that way, like you're not quite yourself, like you should be feeling joy and instead you're feeling numb or worse, even miserable. Just like Andrea Williams said in her episode, you shouldn't have to parent feeling miserable. You work so hard to be the best mom you can. There's no reason to be feeling terrible every day or feeling anxious and on edge. There's no doubt that mothering leaves you tired, exhausted, you know, and not every moment is blissful. But there's a difference between exhausted and feeling helpless. And I really hope that if you feel like you might be suffering from some of these symptoms, that you'll seek medical attention. We're not doctors. We're not trying to give you advice, but we're trying to raise awareness for the types of issues that mothers everywhere are facing. And maternal mental health is a serious issue that's not being talked about. And so as we go forward in May, and I feature different moms every week who share their story of postpartum, whatever it is, depression, anxiety, perhaps you'll see a little bit of yourself in them, or perhaps you'll see a little bit of somebody you know in their story so that you can offer help. We need to be the best version of ourselves we can possibly be. And I hope that if you are suffering in some way from any of these mental challenges after you give birth, I hope that you'll get help because it is not your fault. There is hope and there is help. And I hope that you'll seek after it. As always, you can follow me on Instagram, JessicaDahlquist3. And if you want more information about any of the things that we talked about in today's episode or previous episodes, you can go to ExtraordinaryMomsPodcast.com. I want to thank Peggy again. Today was a really emotional episode for me, and I know that there's going to be some of you who are listening who feel like you're alone, but you're not. You might feel like there's no hope, but there is. And I hope that you will take that next step to do whatever it takes to feel like you again. I hope you all have a wonderful day, and I'll see you next week with another Extraordinary Mom.